In the late 80s and early 90s, supermodels reigned supreme, and among their ranks was Rico Marcello, who, with his tall, muscular body and razor-sharp cheekbones, became the object of every gay man's desire after appearing in ads for Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men and Davidoff's Cool Water.
Even though he was lusted after, Rico wasn't exactly in love with being a model. He was ready to leave the industry, but then something happened that changed his life forever. Today, male supermodel Rico Marcello, who now goes by his real name, Rick Gorey, joins us to talk about his amazing career as a Calvin Klein model, his panther tattoo, and why modeling isn't as glamorous as it seems.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands of legendary shows with the world's top queer artists and entertainers.
Today's Feast of Fun is also brought to you by betterhelp.com/fun. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Thousands of licensed therapists are right now waiting to speak with you.
You can get help now on your own time and at your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist. Licensed professional counselors who are specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, grief, self-esteem, TV and VCR repair. Okay, not really, but we're just saying that to see if you're paying attention. Family conflicts, LGBT matters. If it's weighing on your shoulders, they are there to help you.
Best of all, if you are not happy with your counselor for any reason, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge.
The service is available worldwide on your desktop, mobile web, Android, or iOS applications.
Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Feast of Fun listeners get 10% off their first month with discount code FUN. That spells fun.
So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/fun and quickly get matched with a counselor you'll love.
That's betterhelp.com/fun.
That's why you have to hear me.
I
can
Rick,
hear me. Yeah, Rick.
Can
I can hear you in my own
me?
Head.
Rick.
There's voices in my head.
Did that drive you crazy when they did that Saturday Night Live skit? Rick. Do you remember it?
It didn't, but actually one of the funnier things is when Zoolander came out and the few people that like did know me, they were like, you must be really offended. And I'm like, no, I think it's fucking hysterical. And actually I could see male models doing the whole gas thing.
Modeling is an art. How dare you disrespect me?
Who cares if it's gas? Can anyone have a cigarette?
In the late 80s, model Rick Gorey was considered to be one of the world's most beautiful men. Working under the name Rico Marcello, his tall, muscular body captured the imagination of ad campaigns for Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men and Davidoff's Cool Water. Mark, you probably had Rick Gorey's photo clipped in.
Well, listen, I used to subscribe to GQ. And so, yes, those photos of you on the swing with Cindy Crawford, you with your half-naked body with the water running all over it. I mean,
Who can forget those? So today, thankfully, Rick Gorey is alive and well, living in Chicago. He runs an advertising business and works as a waiter on the weekends. Welcome to Feast of Fun.
Hi, everybody.
What goes through your mind when you see that photo of you with Cindy Crawford on the swing for Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men?
God, my ass looked good.
Did you want to eat your own ass?
No.
Before we started taping, you said that you almost have a disassociative state about it, that when you look at photos of you modeling in your youth, it doesn't feel like that's the real you, and almost like it's somebody else.
Well, it's not me. It's literally the shutter speed of a camera takes a picture of you, and there's hours of makeup and 23 people running around, and, you know, and that becomes what that is. But I leave, the makeup comes off, and I go back to being the fat little kid with braces and glasses.
So when you grew up as a kid, and you grew up in, well, you were born in the United States, but your family's from Chile.
No, my mom is actually from the United States.
Okay.
And we went there, but Pinochet was kind of a creep. So then they defected back. So I actually grew up in America, but I did have a short toddler, stay there
in California and Chicago.
No, California. My mom's actually from Beverly.
Okay.
The Beverly area.
And Chicago.
And mm-hmm. What got you sort of like into that physique at such a young age? You played sports in high school.
I was a football player in high school.
And you were good.
I was good. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I could toss a pigskin.
Mm-hmm. And you got a scholarship because of it.
I did.
And so you moved to California to study
school, farthest away from mom and dad.
And play football with the bros.
And you weren't out, right?
So I was not out, and I was scared to death because in high school I was one of the biggest kids. And when I got there, there were guys with necks the size of my thigh.
Oh, yeah. I remember as an undergraduate in University of Texas at Austin getting on the bus, and some of these football players took up both seats.
Yeah, and now they're going to be chasing me.
And you were so
not for the right reasons, by the way.
But so when you played football, what position did you take?
I was a quarterback.
A quarterback. So for people who don't know football, that's the guy who runs a lot.
That's what guy who runs from the big guys with the necks the size of my thighs a lot.
Mm-hmm. So you're basically trying to you have to be very agile in order to avoid being tackled.
They actually put me in ballet.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, they put you in ballet because ballet artists are very good on 1 foot, 2 feet, their tippy toes. And so, yeah, no, like a lot of coaches believe in ballet as a way to help make certain quarterbacks, running backs, quarterbacks.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was famous for studying ballet in order to pose on stage as a bodybuilder.
But in all fairness, he ate the football because he thought it was a ding dong.
Now, you had an accident and broke your femur and you couldn't play football anymore. And that got you into out of school, I guess, right?
No, I stayed in school.
You stayed in school?
It got me to have to pay for my own school.
Okay.
Because you had a scholarship, and then you broke it, so you couldn't play anymore.
So,
didn't they give you time to heal and be like, come back next year, or is that not an option?
So the whole entire time, technically, I was in a cast. It was they did definitely keep me in there. That was kind of the thing. And I think they actually recently passed a law that they have to do it now. Mm-hmm. Like with, athletics and head injuries, like, no, you have to take care of them kids, even if they can't play for you now. But back then, like the day the cast came off, I was called the dean of admissions and your scholarship's canceled.
Oh, that must have been heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was. But thank God, I still had the football body. So that helped me.
So how'd you help pay the bills?
I became a stripper.
Ooh.
How'd you get turned on to that?
I actually worked in a club and I wore like the bow tie and no shirt and was a cocktail waitress, mm-hmm. That whole song from Human League. And
Don't You Want Me Baby.
Yeah. And then if a dancer, but back then 80s, dancers fell like flies because of drug use. So mm-hmm. when a spot opens up, any of the actual cocktail waiters or bartenders get to audition first.
Mm.
So that's kind of how that happened.
And so you were working at a club as a cocktail waitress, and then you started stripping. Mm-hmm.
5 years later.
Don't You Want Me, Baby. It's a great song. I really love that song.
I love
part
it.
Of the
Don't
new wave.
Don't You Want Me, Baby. For people who are like, what song are they talking about? Don't You Want Me,
You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you. And so you became a stripper. Somebody came in and said you were a hot piece of meat. We want to put you on
well,
stage.
A lot of people actually came in and said, you're a hot piece of meat. Would you like to do some photographs? And then I'm like, but the right person came in and it was kind of legit. And
mm-hmm.
I did do some naked work.
Oh, really?
And from him and his contacts is how I actually got discovered.
What kind of naked work?
Well, let's just say that the swing's not the only place my ass is shown.
So somebody saw some of your nude photos and said, hey, this guy's he's good enough for runway, for print.
I was a centerfold in a magazine, mm-hmm. but I also was in like a lot of coffee mm-hmm. table books and stuff like Mapplethorpe kind of stuff.
Okay. Was it like Playgirl or something? Or was it?
I'd rather not say.
Okay. But you modeled for a lot of famous people, including Bruce Weber.
Yes.
And so like a lot of Bruce Weber's work you're in as well.
Right.
And so do you remember your first big break where you were like realizing this is going to be something pretty big?
The thing is that I can honestly, when I think back, is like you kind of ride that wave, but you never know. And I think that's for all celebrities, you know, do this D-rate movie because you don't know if you're going to get a chance to do something else. And you're, you know, people got to remember my reference. I just got to pay my freaking bills. Like you're going to pay me more money to take more clothes off. You're going to pay me more money to, you know, do this or that. But I never, ever thought like I would be in actual ad campaigns. And kind of like when I got there, even I was kind of like, oh, this is nice. But then, you know, life became hectic and all those things.
Which came first, the Davidoff's Cool Water?
Davidoff.
And that, it was taken at a beach, I'm assuming, and they're just pouring buckets of water over you?
It was actually taken like in a waterfall pool thing, but I was in the water for so long that they couldn't even Visine my eyes no more. So I, like all of it, my eyes are closed because I couldn't open my eyes because they were beat red and burning.
And that's part of the reason why your face is kind of like obscured.
Yeah, like, it hurts. Can we get done now?
What time of the day did that shoot start?
It started at 5 a.m. and it ended at 7 p.m.
Damn.
So the long days, huh?
And I had to keep moving because of lighting.
What do you do for 12 hours when you're sitting underneath a waterfall in a pool?
Well, I mean, they did give me a lunch break and let me have a Tic Tac. But other than that, you know, and lots of cigarettes, you know, back in the day, cigarettes.
But so did they adjust the lighting? They're sort of exploring your body and what kind of image they want to get.
Like people don't like modeling. And I think probably drag queen performers understand it's all about shadow and light. Like,
sure.
I mean, you have to, like, I had a nose job because my nose threw too much shadow over my face from any kind of side picture. So, you know, I had it revised so you could see my other side of my face if I was, like, in, like, you know, angled pillows.
I was told by somebody who works in modeling, it's about bone structure. It's just having, like,
it's the bones that make the shadow that make. Yeah.
So it has to be the right kind of proportion.
Necks are very important. You have to have a long neck.
And then your big break.
It's also really important for, you know, BJs, but yeah, you definitely have to learn that.
And the big moment and the highlight, you can argue, of your modeling career is that swing photo with Cindy
Crawford.
It's
the most iconic, and I think it's the one that most went around.
So was at that time, was Cindy Crawford a big name? Or she was kind of...
Oh, yeah.
So this was like when they said, you're going to be with Cindy Crawford, nude on a swing, and you know, I imagine
was mostly stoked because we're both from the Midwest.
And you were like, this is my home girl.
Yeah. And
that's Bruce Weber took that photo. Yeah. Yes. And so you're, tell me about what that was like. I mean, you're working with some of the biggest names, the most iconic photographers of the 1980s who defined what beauty and what sexiness was for so many people.
Well, first you're talking about it in retrospect. So even back then, I can speak for me. I can't speak for anyone else, but no one really felt we were that iconic. You know, like, you know, it takes time in history to develop being an icon. I don't think anyone felt that way actually at the time.
Early 90s though, a lot of those black and white photos did make themselves onto like merchandise. And so early gay and lesbian bookstores made a lot of money just selling postcards or t-shirts or posters with, you know, your body on it.
Right.
And you did, you know, you got paid.
The thing is, I wasn't going to bookstores and all those things, seeing any of that. Mm-hmm. So like, to me, it wasn't, you know, like I was so busy that I didn't have time to have a personal life or do this or do that or go shopping or any of those things.
Well, what was that day like? What was it like working with Cindy Crawford?
It's amazing. And I mean, I was nervous because, you know, there was literally a loincloth between us for a very long time, and we were young, and like, please
even
don't,
though you were gay, don't. You thought maybe something would happen.
Well, just sensation.
I guess it'd be better. Your groins are thrust up against each other in that photo.
And your eyes are closed, and it's sensation.
So are you? You're not completely naked in that. You have something over covering your junk. And does she have anything covering any part of her? Okay,
but they wear like a little sock under, hat on your genitals, right?
I did, but it's kind of almost like a new, like a nude colored, like G-string, but it's so small that like, it's like fishing wire. Mm. And then it holds this thing in place. Mm.
And was the swing the only image that we're going for, or were they having you guys play?
No, we did a whole bunch of, like, I don't know if people realize it, but when models take pictures, they take, like, on average, first of all, you're getting paid by the hour. So of course you want to screw up a lot of pictures.
I'll have to remember that,
you know, making funny faces and stuff, but
sneezing.
But no, they put us in different scenes and to see which one would be. And you know, Calvin Klein was, you know, that was kind of a shtick, is pushing the envelope. I mean, you know, he did it with Brooke Shields. Mm. That was kind of his deal. And so
had he gone to Cindy Crawford and said, I want you to be naked on a swing with football player.
Yeah.
I
have no idea what their conversation was. And actually people don't realize, like, and I often say this about a lot of things, people don't realize that I'm just like point and click. Like they just tell me, like, all that stuff is handled by agents and managers and lawyers and all that stuff. You just show up. Mm-hmm. And then you're put right into hair and makeup and, you know, time is money kind of thing. And they're paying for these sets. They're paying for your time. And, you know, and you don't get paid to be in hair and makeup, which takes about 2.5 hours. So, you know, I mean.
Oh,
so,
you only get paid for when you're in front of the camera.
When you're or on the runway or. Yeah. I mean, and the other thing I don't think people realize is you have to pay taxes in all the countries you work. Plus when you come back home. So, their incomes are very inflated, but their taxes and everything else, because they're paying multiple countries, everything, that it's really inflated too, just to make sure people know that.
When did you first see the ad campaign run?
I saw it first, I believe, in GQ.
And what must have gone through your head? You're like, oh my God, my life is changing. Or,
well, I was disconnected, like, and couldn't believe it was me. Actually, like, that was my first thing. And for a long time, I kind of felt that way. Like, and like I said, I kind of, like, there's two different people. There's me, nice homeboy, you know, good to his parents and all that stuff. And then there's, you know, the other guy gets his picture taken a lot and looks like Fabio.
RuPaul talks about her drag persona, and a lot of models and drag queens and entertainers, especially queer people around that time period, as they call it, the monster. Mm-hmm. Because it's attached to ego and it's attached to their vanity. And they describe it as a monster because if they allow that monster to take control, they lose control over their own lives.
I can attest that there was a good portion of my life, even post-modeling, where I was a little bit lost and felt invisible.
And what did you do to counteract that?
You know, spend a lot more time with my family, and I, you know, have a wonderful niece who I kind of look at as my own daughter. So I spent a lot of time with her, and, you know, you just kind of try to get balance back. And then, you know, eventually I started going out in the community and, you know, meeting people as me again, and, you know, kind of just left Rico where he belongs. And, you
Rico
know,
suave.
Yeah, just tasty, not gentle.
Not tasty, gentle. When you first had to walk on the runway,
I fell off the runway. I couldn't see, and I fell off the runway.
Why were you so dizzy?
I wasn't dizzy. The lights are so amazingly bright. And
okay.
Like, you couldn't really see, and you're walking, and all, you know, fashion roadkill.
Now, you're 6'4 something, almost 6'5, right? Yeah. So it was kind of a hard sell to get you on the runway at first, right?
It was. And, you know,
most models, they want to be the certain proportion around 6 feet tall, right? Is that right?
Well, modeling follows trends, and I'm not going to diss on things, but I don't think people realize sometimes in the course of a female model's life, how many times she alters or augments her breasts to be for that. You know, they want, you know, small boobs are in this year. Big boobs are in. Like, it's driven by that stuff. I'm not saying I know anyone personally that I know absolutely did that, but, you know, it changes really rapidly. And, you know, there's one, you know, there was Antonio Sabato Jr. was like the hottest thing in the world. And he was like 5'9" modeling, you know, I mean, so then all the male models would be shorter, and guess who took a year off? I mean, you know, it's like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever interact with some of these other sort of iconic models like Antonio? I mean, Antonio Sabato Jr. now I think is like a Trump supporter, but he was the besides Marky Mark, the other sort of face of Calvin Klein's underwear.
Right. And yeah. I always kind of adopted it's a job. And when you're done with the job, you go home. And yeah, I mean, there were some certain parties and stuff like you have to show up to. But I was just kind of like twiddling my fingers going, please let this be over. I mean, I didn't feel comfortable in those situations.
Did your friends think that you were sort of like you had been given this gift and this once in a lifetime opportunity? And you're just like, why don't you appreciate that? This is glamour and fun and drugs. Well, because
in reality, you know, I did not grow up thinking I was glamorous or.
So you felt like you didn't fit in.
Like, I felt, and it's the same way, I'll put it in a different way. Uh-huh. When I go, which I get invited to a lot of stuff, when I have to go to like an art gallery opening or something, and I'm standing there and all the people with their pouty lips and, you know, and they're like looking at a picture and they're like, the artist was tortured. And they see all these things and I'm like, I see a blue dot. Like, you know, like I just... I just think a lot of that world is fake and pompous, and I'm the exact opposite of that. So I just never really, like, you know, I mean, I know people, you know, oh, you're so beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And I'm sure there's people who think I'm really ugly, too.
Well, now you're beautiful on the inside where it counts.
I always was. I just hid it for a while. Mm.
You were also hid that you were gay throughout your modeling career.
And HIV positive. Uh-huh. And yeah, a lot of things.
Was it hard to, did you ever come out? I guess you left modeling and then you came out.
I don't know if I ever had like a coming out party because the assumption was, as it is with a lot of male models, that I was already gay. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I actually, like I didn't have this big coming out thing. My family knew. You know, both my sisters are lesbians, so my mom and dad were like stir crazy with all that. But
wow, they got lucky.
So my family knew, but I just never. It was just never, and I still to this day I do not. I identify as gay. I'm not going to say I don't, but it's just one small part of my life.
Well, I would think that the male model world would have been very welcoming or very to gay men, because I would assume that everybody's working there.
It is, and I'm not saying that people didn't know, but it wasn't like. You know, I'm here, I'm queer, get used to a kind of thing. I think they technically, the inner circle, and that's what I think people don't understand about Hollywood or fame or fortune or celebrities, and it's completely changed now because of social media. Mm-hmm. But there's a code. There's a reason why no one knew Rock Hudson was, you know, gay for so long. Elizabeth Taylor knew he was gay. Everyone else knew he was gay, but they hold those secrets closely. You know, Marilyn Monroe clearly had some issues going on, and I'm not, you know, making a diagnosis, but they keep all that stuff very tight. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot easier to do when there was two rag sheets that are, you know, prying into people's lives versus now it's like the whole entire world's prying into everyone's life all the time. Mm-hmm. So no, it wasn't a matter of me not being gay. It was a matter. And then you got like what I like to call your handlers. And they're concerned about your image and they're concerned about how much money they can make off you because it's a relatively short life. Mm-hmm. So they definitely don't be caught coming out of a gay bar. Don't, you know, have the arm ornament girlfriend, be seen with, you know, I mean, that's definitely told you by your handlers. Like, make sure, because if no one...
Did you do some of that stuff? Did you have a fake girlfriend?
I didn't have a fake girlfriend, but I definitely make sure I would like go out to, a straight bar with a beautiful woman on my arm, and, you know, 90% of the time she knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and say, hey, but she gets to go to a fancy party and meet all these celebrities, so she's happy too. I mean, but no, it was, you know, I don't know. I wish I could say I knew. And I think one of a really good example of that handling would be Ellen DeGeneres. Mm. When she had her show, when was it, in the 90s?
Sure.
And like everyone's like, I think that the public thought that she wanted to come out that way. Mm. I don't believe, and I don't know. I don't know her for sure. But the show saw ratings and money and her agents and all that. Yeah, it's time. And we're going to, you know, we're going to go this way. Mm-hmm. And she goes along with it going, well, you're all the freaking experts. And then what did it do? It tanked her career for how many years? Mm. You know, I mean, that's why I don't think people realize, like, you don't really make those decisions
alone.
Like you just kind of like you're counseled on all these things. And then you kind of like, okay, you know, and especially when you're young, I don't have a lot of access to my parents at the time. I'm overseas and Okay.
Your parents were living in Chile at the time.
No.
Here, oh, you were living in Europe, I see.
My parents were living in the suburbs of Chicago.
What was your living situation like? Because I read stories nowadays about male models and how it's a rough life. And it's like basically like for a lot of these models, they're like living 15 of them in an apartment. They're living in bunk beds.
That is true. And you pay for your own flights. Mm. And, you know, but that's where I think the disconnect where people think that you're living this wonderful, amazing, star-studded, going on red carpet life. And I mean, and it's other industry people, musicians, you know, they do that first video and then everyone thinks they're living this life and they're broke and, you know, cause they're not getting the money yet. And no, it was. And I mean, you know, and once you start getting bigger checks, you can afford to, you know, live with five people instead of 15 and then go on. But yeah, there's like, because Europe, a lot of people back then, I don't know about so much now, but like everyone went to Europe to be a model. Everyone did. And like, you, like literally they're like hostels, like one bathroom. Imagine 30 models getting ready with one bathroom.
Were you turned on by any of the guys that you were staying with?
Oh, totally. Totally.
Was there any kind of hanky panky?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound bad to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you like, well, this shoot's taking a long time. I'll meet you in the bathroom in 5 minutes.
It was more actually like, for me, it was more there is that I'm not going down some Me Too movement rabbit hole, but there is a lot of people who are in positions where they can, you know,
exploit you
because they hold your career in their hands and they know it. And I mean, there are full circle moments because then you become famous and then I'm like, wow, you know, remember 10 years ago when you made me do something? Well, guess what? I'm not gonna let you take my picture unless you do something. And it was a kind of reward vengeance kind of thing. It was, but you know, and the whole time I'm thinking you're a freaking hot Italian photographer. I would do it anyways. You know, like you don't have to like do the power thing with me.
So the fashion world is portrayed in movies like Zoolander or Devil's Wears Prada is probably tame and it's actually even more wild or more vindictive.
It is more dramatic. I don't think so as much for the guys.
Okay.
But I definitely think, especially in the, like, I don't think modeling today is what it was in the 90s. I don't think it was in the 2000s what it was in the 90s. 90s was kind of like the iconic.
You were at the height of the supermodel term.
Yeah, the supermodel thing, which I do not believe was Janice Dickinson coining that term, by the way. I don't know for sure, but I don't think it was her. I think it had something to do with Cindy Crawford and being on like 20 million different covers at the same time.
Mm. Who's the person that said, I don't get out of bed for $1 million?
I think that might be Janice Dickinson.
I think maybe Linda Evangelista.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe.
You know,
I don't know.
Did you ever feel that way? You're like, I'm not getting out of
bed. Never, 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 never. And people don't realize, like, they see that finished product, but they have no idea the production that goes into getting that finished project. And it's very, for the most part, professional. And there's like women with clipboards and, you know, I mean, I think that people think that like once you're in that industry or any acting, music, whatever, comedian, like your whole life is red carpets. Like that's how the Kardashians want to portray it to you.
Mm. Yeah. It's people always say, God, Fausto, you're so beautiful. You're so handsome. I'm like, I take 100 photos and I use the best one. I do not see the worst one.
And there's FaceApp and Photoshop and.
Oh, yeah. Honey. Yeah, it's like, someone accused me like, you retouch your photos. And I'm like, you know what? I'll post your photos not retouched. How would you like that?
I totally like everything goes through FaceApp. My current Facebook photo right now when I'm in kind of quasi drag at camp retreat, I'm like in totally faced that one.
Now, Rick, tell me about the day you found out from your doctor that you were HIV positive.
I actually found out over the phone.
They called you?
They called me.
That's unusual.
Devastating. And I am very fortunate that I found out right away. My T cells were fine. And
what year was this?
89.
So that was at a time.
It was actually July 31st, 1989.
When a lot of HIV positive people felt that hearing that from the doctor was
a death sentence. No, he actually said, if you live 5 years, you'll be really, really lucky. And I'm 51. So shame on him. And I think that's really horrible to do to any 21 year old kid. No, it's just horrible to do.
How did your life change after that?
Well, Sunston need to make money for one. And I think that that definitely plays a reason why I'm so disconnected from like the fame, the fortune, the feeling that way, because I had so much other things going on in my head. And what should have been the best time of my life was actually the most crucial, because now I'm adding, is someone going to find out? Is it going to be in the National Enquirer? Blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was like, mm-hmm. you know, a raw nerve ending all the time.
And there was a fear that it would hurt your ability to make money. And since you didn't have health care, you were just struggling to make ends meet so you could just get to see a doctor.
Back in the day, I think AZT came out to about $8,000 a month.
Wow. Were you on AZT?
Mm-hmm.
And you, for people who watch,
I had pancreatitis 7 times.
Was AZT effective medical treatment for you?
Well, I'm still here, so I'm going to say yeah. But I think that, you know, the damage it does to your body, in particular, I think it screws up your mitochondria. But, you know, I had pancreatitis,
and like 7 times. For people that don't know, is extremely painful. Because explain to the listeners what happened.
So the first time it happened, actually, I was home visiting, and I was with some high school friends, you know, hanging out in my local pubs. And I ate a big greasy cheeseburger, which kind of, you know, agitates that stuff, because when you have to make your pancreas make enzymes, I guess. I don't want to pretend mm-hmm. that. I'm not Trapper John MD, so I'm not going to go there.
But it produces insulin, right?
But it produces insulin, but it also produces enzymes. And then all of the enzymes from your liver, your gallbladder, and your pancreas are in one tube that goes into your stomach. What happens with pancreatitis is that it swells and clamps the tube. So all those enzymes that should be eating the steak you just ate are now eating you. Mm. So the first time it happened, I literally, my poor Jeez. Father, and I want to make sure that I don't want it to go in this dark thing, but I was home. It was 1993, and I got home from my dad's, and I woke up in the middle of the night. Like, I could not move, and I was excruciating pain, and my dad called the ambulance, and they wouldn't take me to the hospital.
Because you're HIV positive. Mm-hmm.
So my father, who's considerably smaller than me, I get the height from my mom's side, was trying to get me in his car and brought me to the hospital. And my dad was like, you know, like a typical guy born in the 40s, not a lot of emotion, but I was literally puking up my own stomach lining. And they're like, if he makes it through the night. And then like, he called my friend, my mom and my sisters were, I think they were visiting London. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like my dad had to sit it out the whole night with me. Like, and then I woke up and my friend Sandy, who I had the cheeseburger with, she was there. But yeah, no, like when you would look down, like my stomach looked like when that alien's gonna come out with the movie Alien.
Yeah.
Like my muscles were being like jumping from the pain. It looked like it really looked like there was something crawling under my skin.
Oh my God, that sounds horrible. And then it's gotta be just like crushing to hear from a medical professional saying, we're not gonna take you because you're HIV positive.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the second time it happened to me. Actually, the first time was my childhood dentist wouldn't work on my teeth. I mean, I guess I understand, he had 3 small kids. And you know,
dentist said this kid's gonna die soon?
No, my dentist, when I went for a regular checkup I had to disclose I was HIV positive, wouldn't work on my teeth. He's like, you have to find another dentist. So it was the second time it happened to me.
So and then that's a thing that people don't really grasp about people who were HIV positive in the late 80s and early 90s, that it was not a situation where even if they wanted to come out of the closet, they could, because they were denied medical, dental, employment, all kinds of things. That's a reason why so many people were, you know, chaining themselves to the doors of the CDC, because there was so much misinformation and fear.
Yeah, and you know, and there wasn't a lot of help. And, you know, the only reason that they actually started helping is because straight people started getting it. I do believe that. Mm. Like, I think they would have put off funding if it wasn't for like Paul Michael Glacier, like Elizabeth Glacier. Mm. And then, you know, down the road a little bit more, Magic Johnson, which, you know, that whole issue irritates me.
And Ryan White, small young kid.
Yeah, you know, like that brought such media. And then like the rest of America's kind of like, you need to do something. Like this isn't just the gay plague now, you know. Mm. I think it's wonderful that, you know, Elizabeth Glacier did what she did for all of us. And she's like, hey, I'm no different than him. Mm-hmm. I got it too. Like, and mm-hmm. she really made a statement to the America or the world about, like, it doesn't matter how you get it. People are dying. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really important. And, you know, Magic Johnson, I'm really upset about that whole situation, because, you know, Rock Hudson, they make this horrible lewd movie, like he's picking up people in his Corvette and having lewd sex in his house.
Well,
and,
he was.
But they made that really dirty, and then Magic Johnson gets it from screwing 10,000 women, and he's the new savior of HIV. Like, I don't think people realize, maybe they don't realize how unequal that was.
Sure.
They made a horrible movie about Liberace, and, you know, it's just like, and Magic Johnson gets in, like, oh, great, he got it from a girl. And that really irritated, so and being a positive person, like, that really irritated me. That really, really did. And I'm glad, because he put a face on it and got even more funding and made it more normalized. And I mean, what he did was miraculous with getting it. I just don't like the way that they portrayed the gays as these horrible people. And
it's, you know, even today, I think they still stigmatize our sexuality in many ways.
Yeah, no. And you know what? Well, I'm 6'6" and I'll go on a straight passion. So you better not call me faggot to my face.
I won't.
At the height of your career, you were hanging out in nightclubs, very glamorous clubs, and there must have been some really amazing moments there with some, like, entertainers. You know, you were hanging out in New York City and Europe and Los Angeles.
It was weird. I've been to Studio 54.
Yeah.
And it is amazing, and it's so... It's to me, it was like a double-edged sword. It's like at some point I had to fit in, like I'm one of these people, which I never felt I was. So you can't like run up and like, oh my God, you know, like you can't do that kind of stuff. But
who did you recognize? Who did you see?
Madonna, I think, would be the, you know, like the one I really wanted to do that to. And,
you know, a lot of people, when they first see Madonna, they're just shocked at how little and tiny she is.
Yeah. She comes up to my belly button.
Yeah, she's a, you know, she qualifies as a little person, or?
No, I don't think she does, but she is
like
very,
5'2 or something.
Yeah, she's very petite. Yeah,
it's tiny, tiny woman.
She is. And, but I mean, that would be like one instance, but I wouldn't say like the whole vibe is like everyone has to show up and be here.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I guess maybe people made friends there, but I don't know if it's not like I was like, well, again, I don't think today's society realize you're not sitting there with your cell phone grabbing numbers, and you
didn't have cell phones.
You don't have your like pad of paper and pad. Like communication that way was so, it was more like you would say like, I'll have your people call my people. Like it was really like such a different time than it is today. I don't think people realize. So yeah, I went to those things and yeah, I left them and yeah, I did meet a few people, but it's not like I made lifelong friends with very many of them either.
Well, you're so friends with Bruce Vilanch.
Yeah, well, he's hysterical. And, you know, I mean, actually, when we met, it was at a, like a house party.
Yeah.
It was just like, I mean, he was just kind of like in the corner. I'm like, aren't you a comedian? Like, I don't think the model drunk on 5 martinis should be doing the comedy routine.
But Bruce knows everybody.
But, yeah, and so, you know, he asked me to show him my dick and I did. And then he started being funny.
And so through Bruce Vilanch, you've developed all other friendships with people.
Not through him, but there is a there is a specific, we have the same birthday and there's other celebrities that have the same birthday. And Bruce has, you know, pushed this whole let's do birthday FaceTime thing. And I do always contact him on our birthday. And I'm kind of excited to see who's going to get into this. And especially with technology now, you can like talk to everybody across the world. So I'm interested. And I know Miley Cyrus has the same birthday as me and him. And I believe an actor named Odette Fur. And I want to say he's from Charmed.
But so you called Bruce and he was actually on a call with.
Oh, Miley. Yeah. At the No. So the party I was at, Bruce Vilanch was writing something for Bette Midler and she called and then he put her on speaker and we all kind of like had this fun, get drunk with Bette Midler in London on the phone.
Yeah. You know, if I were seeing Bette Midler and I'm drunk, I'd be like, sing the rose, Bette.
Yeah.
Some say love.
And like, we had been partying. As a matter of fact, it was an after party for Gay Pride.
Oh, wow.
He was in town. I think he was a Grand Marshal.
Yeah.
Now, you have a tattoo of a Black Panther on your chest. Tell us about the tattoo.
So the tattoo, I could not be tattooed as a model because I was the pretty one. You know, big blue eyes and all and blonde hair. So.
Well, and also the aesthetic was different today.
Well, no, I mean,
now,
they're like Tyson Beckford had tattoos and he pulled it off. But like they just, I was like the clean teen, long-haired surfer, Like, I would never put ink in my body, dude. Like, that was my persona. But when I did walk the runway, they said that I had an uncanny knack of looking like I was a panther prowling for prey. So that's kind of how that all started.
So people call you the panther on the runway. And you are from the, what is it, the Chilean rainforest.
Yes.
The Amazon.
Chilean rainforest.
So also people have called you a glamazon.
Yes,
because you're a glamorous model and an Amazon.
Yes, I'm sure we can thank a certain drag queen for the title.
Have you ever asked the people about that title or how?
I haven't. I take it all in good humor and fun, like Zoolander and all those other things. Yeah. You know, it's all in fun. Matter of fact, Zoolander 2, when Benjamin Cumberbatch is playing all, I literally peed my pants laughing.
But people have written pretty well-known songs inspired by your work as a model.
Maybe. Yeah. Possibly. I mean, I guess in a sense, models are muses to everyone else.
And I have to say, that's one of my favorite songs. If we could, songs inspired by models are so wonderful.
You know, yeah. But I think that people get inspired for different reasons. Amy Winehouse got inspired by pain.
And suffering. And that's part of the attraction to your story in your life, but also in modeling in general is that, you know, we're seeing these extraordinarily beautiful people suffering to create this image that isn't really real. It's an idealized image of what we want to look like and what we think about our bodies and ourselves when we buy clothes.
And I do take responsibility, you know, like I believe that supermodels and 90s models get tagged with causing, you know, a lot of eating disorders and stuff. And I do feel somewhat responsible, but I want people to know, like, you know, I eat Big Macs. It's a genetic thing. I'm 51 and I still have a 32-inch waist. So
do you ever had somebody like go, Rick, you messed up my life because you're so hot and beautiful?
I have never had anyone say that to me. I've certainly not had anyone say it to me like that because I don't go south of Southern Illinois. But no, I have not had anyone say that to me. But I do feel that, you know, people need to know that even models don't look like that in that picture. Like, we don't wake up and look that way, for one. A lot of really, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't models who use things to maintain a super small figure, or there's male models that take, you know, testosterone enhancements, and I'm not saying I'm knowing them. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that be happy the way you are, and I'm so happy with plus size modeling and people being okay with it, and, you know, and people being okay with their own. If people spent as much money on therapy to be happy with who they are as they do on trying to look like me, I think they'd be happier in 5 years.
So when you look in the mirror today and you see yourself, what do you think?
I see like an aged man for sure. You know, I do, but I won't do Botox. I won't do any of that stuff. I did Botox once. It was a horrible experience for me, not because I didn't look good, but because you're telling a joke and you think you're making a funny face, but in reality, you're just frozen in time. And I'm like, why is no one laughing at my jokes? So I'd rather be old and funny and wrinkly than, you know, frozen in time and being forever 21. Not a plug to that store, by the way.
You were, you know, lifting a lot of weights and exercising a lot in your youth. Do you exercise and lift weights today? Or?
I do. And I'm not trying to get bigger or anything like that. And doesn't matter how many weights I lift and how much I run on the treadmill, my skin's still setting hot, you know, it's still heading south. So it's not like, you know, I mean, yeah, I guess I have a six pack, but the skin's not quite as tightly as attached to it as it used to be. And I'm okay with that. Like, you know, I'm totally okay with that.
Is your sex life better or worse or different?
One of the things I think about my sex life, one of the biggest problems with my sex life, not that I have any problems with it, but it's that my stature in general is intimidating. So yeah, maybe there is someone standing at the other side of the bar and wants to say hi to me, but they're like, you know, and then
so people do remember, and
I don't even think it's from remembering me. I just think, you know,
but they're just intimidated by you.
You know, they're intimidated, you know, by the look, by the size, by the huge shoulders, and you know, and
they're still 6 foot.
Yeah, I'm six. I'm six technically 6'5 2/4.
And what I when we were preparing for the show, I did notice that, you know, in many ways you have been erased from history. Like, you went to Google and said, take my name down, take it as much as you want to take away from your existence in this career.
Because people are, because there's too many ugly people in the world that, and I'm not saying I know any one person or it's like some kind of vendetta, but, mm-hmm. you know, I have a family. I have, you know, my niece and as much as I consider to be my daughter, she has two kids. You know, everyone from my hometown knows who I am. So it's not like you can go anywhere with like a credit card with their last name and they're like, oh, you know, so it's not, you know, I don't think, you know, my legacy is about them now. It's not about me. And I could care less if anyone knew who I was or not. I really could.
But why erase it? It's not erasing it. Okay.
It's not erasing it. I just don't think the whole freaking world has to have access to my life. And if they have access to my life, it's through Facebook and I get to control the content.
And you were having trepidation about telling your story today with us. I hope that, you know, that you don't feel like this is like sort of, taking back some control that you have about your life.
It is. I'm anxious and nervous, but you know, I also see the greater good in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so with that being said, and
what kind of advice would you have for like a young person that's considering a career in modeling?
Stop taking duck face selfies. You're not a model because you take a lot of pictures of yourself.
You gotta start telling Dakota York, yesterday's guest, because I was like, don't do that. But they love doing that.
They love doing it. And to be honest, there are models. I don't consider myself one, but there are models who just have that natural. I think Michelle Pfeiffer would be a classic example of someone who has that natural duck pout.
What? Mm-hmm. Why is it a bad idea to do a duck face, which for people who don't know that is you're looking like you're about to kiss the camera.
Okay.
So pouting your lips.
There's a couple reasons. First of all,
it's youthful.
Well, the reason not to do
if
it.
If you're no. trying to promote yourself and trying to catch the eye of someone, they want to see you. No makeup, no pouty lip, no nothing. Then they vision that for you. And if they think you need a pouty your lip, they'll inject them. Don't you worry. You know, but you, I just feel that younger people, they're concerned about likes and all these things and taking these pictures and it's pretending to live this fabulous life that they're not actually living. And
well, the mechanics, the same as when you're seeking the attention of a casting agent, as you are when you're trying to get somebody a very attractive on a dating or hookup app.
The thing is that when you are trying to attract someone, a mate to date, I guess is a better way to put it. You do dress to the nines and put on your best face and do the cute thing and wear the right cologne. Mm-hmm. Casting directors and agents need to see you stripped of all that so they can vision what you'll look like dressed to the nines with their professional makeup artist and whatever, and hair extensions and whatever else they're going to do to you. If you're presenting them that already, you may be screwing up your own chance. Mm-hmm. And don't, you know,
because they feel like they're being manipulated, so they don't want to consider that somebody.
I don't think they think they're being manipulated. No. It clouds their vision. They want to see the blank canvas. Mm-hmm. They don't. I don't know if they want to see.
So take more natural looking photos. Is what you think.
And again, I have not been part of it. I know there's like all these websites that are modeling agency websites and all these things, and people are posting all their things on there, and I get it. And it's like quadruplized than what it was in the old days. I understand that. But the problem is it's also created, from my experience, it's also created a lot of people giving themselves, you know, an inflated self-worth that, while you're doing that, and I'm a model, I'm on this website, none of them are getting paid for, they're doing the work. Mm-hmm. Now you have the sense of a flight. I'm a model and you run around. And I see it like with the Twinks and Boys Town all the time, you know, like, okay, but you're not. In order to actually be a successful model, you have to get paychecks. That's kind of the thing. And back in my day, I remember people coming up to me all the time with like their glamour. Remember glamour shots?
Yeah.
With the glamour shots photo. I'm a model. I'm a model. I'm
like, you took those at the mall.
I didn't say that, but there's a little more to it than just taking a really striking picture once. Like, you know, there's, it's a whole industry. It's, you know, money and agents. And so I know, but I think it gives people a false sense of self. I do. And I think all that time spent in doing selfies, maybe, I don't know, reading a book or becoming more interesting or politics or any of those things might also garnish a beneficial, satisfactory feeling inside oneself. I don't know. I just kind of feel like there's a lot of empty souls walking around, shells.
But your soul, your cup is full.
Yes, because I realized even in the height of all that stuff, like, this is going to end and I'm going to have to be a normal human being again. And
that's what we mean by beauty on the inside.
You know,
it's about enjoying and celebrating life.
And even like, you know, I have a lot of good friends and a lot, you know, Teriyaki's a good friend of mine and all these other people are good friends of mine. But watching them transform and transform back is also interesting. And it's helped me on my journey to,
you mean like drag queens putting on makeup? Like,
just not just drag queens, but just watching people transform. And I've been paying a lot more attention like that. And just my friends transforming and, you know, things that worried them. Like, they're all like, you know, people turning 40, the things that all worried them. And I keep telling them, wait till 50. Like, you don't care. You just don't care. I don't care what people think I look like. Let the little queen say I'm old and wrinkly and fat. I don't care. I'm like, and my responsibility, like, well, we'll see what you look like when you're 50.
Well, part of it is I think people are just hard to accept the word no. When they're seeking out, you know, ambition or relationships, the most painful word is no. And we've seen time and time again doing
this
podcast.
They're not seeking out ambition. They're not seeking out ambition.
A job, for example.
They're seeking out fame.
Sure.
Like I kind of refer to it like remember those old Walgreens commercials, like the corner of happy and healthiness. Like they're like, there's some intersection where fame and fortune resides and they're just going to, they drive their car far enough. They're going to make it there. And then when they get there, and then I always bring up things, I bring up people and I don't want to diss anyone, but teen kids that turn into celebrities. Okay, I'm going to do it. Lindsay Lohan, did fame and fortune, did she seem like a happy girl to you? I mean, did she? Like, that's what you're promoting. That's what you want. I mean, she got it a different way, you know, where, you know, she was a kid actor and ended up in these parties and these situations. But, you know, Britney Spears shaved her. Do these people seem like they're happy at fame and fortune? And this is the only, there's whole shows dedicated to making people teen idol or American this and American that. And like, there's whole shows dedicated to make the show is to find new talent.
But really about being famous.
But I think for the people applying who do have talent, by the way, it's about being famous. And, you know, then when you're there, you're kind of like, well, I was. I'm like, no, you. I send that whole thing right back to you. Like, no, I just want the paycheck. So, you know, I just don't think that people should be so concerned with. Do something you like to do. Do something you love. Do it really well. And, you know, if you're really good at it, you know, maybe fame will come. But when you don't earn it and you just, you know, win some TV show or you just keep taking pictures of yourself until you wear like some modeling agent down and they get you one little campaign, like, I don't know. Does it really mean the same to you? I don't know.
Rick, I appreciate you so much sharing your story and your life with us. And it's fascinating. And we really just got the tip of the iceberg.
Just the tip.
But
you're up to my knees.
Would you ever consider modeling again if somebody approached you?
I do get offers. And no.
You're done with that.
First of all, I mean, let's face it. Like for now, like there's so many new men's skincare lines and I have been approached for a couple of them. And then for one of them, I did a test shot and then they photoshopped me till I was 12 years old. So I'm like, oh, that's not me.
And did you get like final approval or something, or did the ad?
Well, it was just a test shot, so okay. I hadn't signed anything yet at that point. But they're like, this is the kind of thing we're going for. I mean, I had like breast implants, and
you got breast implants?
Well, no, I just had really large pecs, and I'm like, no, not me. And I'm like, but your whole thing selling it to me was like, you want to like this older men demographic. So you want to use who I was, because I am old, and then Photoshop me back till I'm young, so mm-hmm. you can make them believe that if they put this miracle cream on their face, they're going to like miraculously turn 30 years younger. Like, it's that. But the real thing is, when you sign those contracts, they own your butt. And I'm done with people owning my butt.
Mm. Yeah, honey, if they're going to own it, it's going to be in the bedroom.
That's right. That's exactly right.
We want to remind folks that Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you.
Visit feastoffun.com/plus and become a plus member today, because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to fantastic people like Rick and find out their interesting story about the pictures and things happening behind the scenes if it weren't for you.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated to know like how crazy and fucked up and wild all these people that we just idolize, you know. And and part of it is like I look at someone like the Calvin Klein muscular model, the
Marky Mark,
not the other one, who became a Trump supporter, Antonio Sabato Jr., who later on became this like Republican right winger. And it was just like, you know, he don't know which way is up. You know, he's like, he's drowning in the bottom of an ocean of misinformation and lies and deceit. And he's trying to go to the surface to get some oxygen. And he's just going deeper and deeper.
But I know why.
Why?
Because once your handlers are making all your decisions for you, you make bad decisions.
So you don't have the experience of making your own choices.
When you're 18 years old and everyone's making choices for you, you don't learn how to budget things. You don't learn a lot.
And I have to say, you know, I suffered so much as a queer youth in desiring and hoping and dreaming of that stuff. And, you know, it's okay not to look like the girls in the magazines, but fortunately I do.
We all do. I'm not sorry if you find my beauty oppressive.
Don't hate me because I was beautiful. I used to be ugly until I used Pantene. Thank you, Kelly.
Remember, folks, if you want to look more beautiful, visit our store, feastoffun.com/store, and get a t-shirt today. Yes. You look marvelous.
And we're on Patreon, honey. You get behind-the-scenes photos and all the tea and all the good stuff that doesn't make it on the podcast at patreon.com/feastoffun. Rick Gorey, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody. Bye. Bye.